Hello, everyone. This is Avi, and I'm here with another edition of Savvy Conversations. And today, we will be talking about the science of dreams and dreaming. We're going to cover what dreams are, what happens in our sleeping and dreaming brains, and why all of this matters, and also why we should pay attention to our dreams. I'm so excited to be joined today by one of my frequent partners in crime, dream expert Nicolina Dawis-Isima. She is on a mission to show us all how we can use the power of sleep and dreams to wake up with new ideas and insights, and she helps people from all walks of life reach breakthroughs by making sense of their dreams. She's also a member of the International Association for the Study of Dreams, an author and a speaker, and she offers one-on-one coaching as well as workshops. Welcome, Nicolina.
I'm really excited to be here. I get to talk about dreams, and it's my favorite topic ever. For anyone who hasn't heard me speak before, then today I'm going to throw so much science at you that at the end you'll be like, I had no idea we knew all of these things about the dreaming mind and what my brain does when we're asleep. So at some point, especially for people who think dreams are nonsense, this is going to be the talk for you. Preparing to blow your mind, and I hope I succeed.
I know that you're going to succeed because I know what you have planned. Okay. Those of you who've gotten to know me a bit know that I am truly and deeply fascinated by how we humans work and how our inner worlds, our emotions, our thoughts, our beliefs, and our memories shape our patterns and our behavior and our decisions. This curiosity is what inspired me to begin journeying with psychedelics and plant medicines, mainly ayahuasca and wachuma, about 6 years ago. And if these sound like foreign words to you, do not worry. We will be doing some rooms about these plant medicines this upcoming year. But they are natural plant brews that have been used for thousands of years by ancient civilizations for the purpose of healing and self-actualization, for lack of a better word. And my intention with all this was to gain a deeper understanding of myself and others and consciousness as a whole. And boy, did I ever. It took me one journey with Mother Aya, and I was hooked. And journeying with these medicines has become a part of my life because the insights they provide me are truly transformative. And then a few months ago, I came across Nicolina as she was speaking about dreams on Clubhouse, and it stopped me in my tracks. She was talking about how our dreams can provide deeper access to our inner worlds and offer us the opportunity to uncover unconscious aspects of our patterns and personalities. And that wasn't all. I also learned that we could brainstorm while we are sleeping and dreaming and wake up with new ideas. So what now? We actually can brainstorm while we are asleep? Until then, what little I knew about dreams came from a few articles I read over the years in women's magazines while at the nail salon. And they mostly focused on the meaning or the interpretation of certain common dreams, like those about flying or being chased. I remember being a little skeptical as I was listening to Nicolina share her insights. Can all of this actually be true? Is there real science to back up these claims? And if yes, why had I, of all people, not heard about any of this until now? Especially as I'd done so much research about the potential ways to tap into unconscious parts of my own psyche. And at this point, I had about 100+ ayahuasca journeys under my belt. I know, yikes, but I'm really into this self-awareness and consciousness stuff. So thus began my exploration of the world of dreams with Nicolina, who shared with me the research findings she considered most significant in the space. And these insights shifted my perspective and presented me with a potentially new way to deepen my self-awareness and understanding. a way that was available to me every night. And that's what I find really remarkable about it. The science of dreams has been studied at universities around the world for decades, especially in the realms of psychology and neuroscience. In fact, there is a scientific paper published by the American Psychology Association called Dreaming, which is entirely devoted to scientific studies on dreams. So why haven't most of us heard about these insights? And why isn't this information more visible and widely available in the mainstream? Here's what I've landed after doing some research and brainstorming with Nicolina about it. There seems to be two reasons, at least two reasons that feel clear to me so far. I'm sure there might be others. But the first is that our cultural understanding of dreams is mostly associated with what we collectively consider to be woo-woo. Psychics and dream interpreters who, upon hearing about our dreams, can tell us its meaning. Many online destinations for dream interpretation even offer tarot card readings. So most of the commerce connected to dreams is derived from these online businesses that, through their advertising and content creation, manage to drown out the scientific articles and information that is available. So that's number one. And I think number two is what I've heard from Nicolina is that the core group of scientists involved with dream research prefer to keep their network and its footprint small and exclusive. And their findings are rarely translated into applicable insights that are communicated in non-scientific language or mainstream platforms. So this information isn't digestible in the form that it is in the scientific studies outside of academic circles, and it's rarely makes its way to broader audiences. So there's a drowning out, and then there's a lack of availability of information in the form that we, me, Avi, can digest. So this is the reason that we, and by we, Nicolina and I, were inspired to host this conversation, which will be the first part of a three-part conversation series about dreams. Today, we'll talk about the science of dreams and share with you the research findings we think are most valuable and relevant so we can set a strong foundation for our next two conversations. Our second conversation will focus on the connection between our dreams and creativity and creative thinking. And obviously, that you'll hear some support for that today. And for the third installment, we'll discuss the ways our dreams help us bring our subconscious intelligence to light so we can deepen our self-awareness and better understand our patterns and the way we show up in the world. So we're really excited for this. So Nicolina, let's get started. I would love for you to talk about what dreams are. I know it's one of those concepts that's so difficult to explain.
Yeah, I can struggle a long time because within the scientific community that you just spoke about, did you know there's not even one definition? Because it's hard. Here's the thing. This is what a lot of people seem to not know. That is that when we fall asleep, there's this sensation of letting go and your mind goes to rest and you relax. And then in the morning, your brain fires up again with rested neurons and now you can work. That is not true. That is not true at all. It feels like that because we're letting go of control. But actually, if you look at a brain scan, the minute that we take, even if we're not sleeping, a moment of rest is when you see a lot of brain activity, as much as when we're doing something really actively. So this idea that we stop thinking the minute that we fall asleep, not true. We think the entire night through. And at Harvard, they started to actually call it thinking in your sleep, like sleep mentation. There's a woman researcher named Deirdre Barrett, who I'm a fan of. And she said, it's thinking, but it's a different biochemical state. So you can't not call it thinking if you call brain activity thinking in the day, but it's different. It feels different. The focus shifts. So we're using our brain absolutely, but in a different way. And the difference that she formulates is it's more focused on making connections. You can't start making all kinds of connections in the day when you have to drive a car or talk to people or do anything that needs focus. but you can when you don't have to focus. And one of the main differences of an awake brain and a sleeping brain is this ability to make completely random connections. And that sounds okay, why would that matter? But it actually matters a lot because it gets you out of your mindset completely and out of the logical way of thinking that we have in the day and the linear way of thinking, and more to the, okay, but what if we explore this option? And what if we connect this memory with that memory? Then what happens? And what if we put our feelings into the mix? Then what happens? One of the main shifts is the shift from focused and producing things on the outside world to letting go of that focus, letting go of that sort of control, but letting your brain make all kinds of new pathways. That's probably why we sometimes wake up with a good idea. And the second really big shift, apart from the connectivity that is, for me, already mind-blowing, is that we focus a lot on our feelings in the sleep. So the logical parts of our brain, specifically in the prefrontal cortex, where a lot of the control of us experiencing ourselves as humans that are in control of our lives and make decisions and planning things and stuff, that does take a backseat. It's actually one of the few brain areas that simmers down a bit. But the emotional parts of our brain really go to town in sleep. That's probably why dreams can get so intense, because it's freedom. So what you get is super emotional freedom and super connective thinking, completely out of the box, very broad, very innovative, where you can connect all of that creative thinking with all of the emotions that you have. Within a brain environment where you have access to all of your memories, you're processing tons of information from the day, and you can connect that back to your feelings. And that's probably why a lot of people, when they're in a stressful state in their lives, get stressful dreams, because all of those feelings bubble up and start to connect with all the experience that we're having. So if you ask me what is dreaming, I'm going to say it is a way of thinking. If we see thinking much broader than, oh, I'm going to think of something now, that's a very logical way of seeing thinking. But if we see the way we come up with ideas, the way we experience ourselves, the way we are conscious of our body, our feelings, anything that lives inside of us as thinking, which I do, I've broadened my definition a lot on that one, then that process never stops. It's just that in the night, we get this shift towards focusing inwards, to our feelings, to exploring new options, to processing everything that we've learned, and to see what we can do with that. And then you wake up. And unfortunately, like you said, today we live in a society that people from that entire nightly process that takes hours, you're never going to remember everything, right? You remember a dream. Are you going to look up online, what does it mean when I dream of a horse? That to me is a little bit of a shame, because I don't want other people to tell me what I've been thinking. I want to explore instead of interpret, if that makes sense. I want to unpack instead of let someone tell me what it means. Tell me if you have questions about this completely different definition than you see online so far, Avi.
I love this definition. It's not really a definition. You're describing an experience. And every time we're talking about dreams, it makes me want to be able to live in my waking life the way that we get to experience our emotions and our brain working while we're sleeping, because it sounds like a superior way of functioning for most humans.
It does, but you would go insane, because you can't have that complete creative freedom all the time. You also have to wash your hair or make a phone call or get groceries. So I feel that we as humans have a shift that's constantly going between output, like you got to do stuff. If I want to write a blog, thinking about it is going to only help me so far. That means I know what to write about, but I'm still going to have to write it. but also the input of new ideas. That's also what you do when you're awake, things out of the corner of your eye. You get inspiration from nature, from movies, from conversations, and then processing all of that. Really letting it sink in, that is more of a quiet time activity. That is why sometimes when you experience information overload, it's amazing to just sit back and close your eyes for a second. Even then, your neurotransmitters and your brain starts to shift a little bit more towards that process of making new connections, seeing if we can use all of this somewhere. But the minute that we open those eyes and start focusing on the computer screen again, it stops because you got to focus outside. So I feel like instead of an off and on switch, we have this constant navigating between introspection and our inner world, which is amazing. And then what are we going to do with that in the outside?
That must explain why so many people who meditate have so much clarity, because they're taking that pause. So there is something about the intention of it, which works for meditation. And then there is the part of it where we just need to be sitting with our eyes closed and stop doing stuff to be able to recalibrate. So that's just powerful, knowing that is the part of this process that we can become closer to if we want to while we're awake.
You're so right. And guess what? People who meditate a lot, like hours in a day, they actually start to sleep shorter, because part of that process that most people have to do at night, because when else are you going to do it? They already do during meditation brainwaves and REM sleep brainwaves. Pretty similar, actually. I think for our thinking process as humans, for our just consciousness, our being human, not just making sense of the world, but also actually coming up with great stuff, that quiet time is much more valuable than we give it credit for.
I know, Nicolene, I'm still working on not being so busy, and I'm progressing, but it's very slow.
It's tricky. It's like super tricky. I know. And sometimes you can't. Sometimes you're in a space in your life where you just have to go and do. Inspiration will come later, and it will.
Totally. And I think there's also some things that we need to unlearn. Even you're talking about all the benefits of sleep, and I know you're really passionate about talking about why sleeping isn't lazy. Part of it is that sometimes we can't, and we're parents and we have clients and so much is going on. But part of it is also that we were never taught how important it can be to sleep, because the process that's physically happening, and we'll start talking about what's going on with our brain while we sleep and we dream. We didn't know this information. If we did, we would probably want to be sleeping a lot more and have a different respect for those hours while we are sleeping.
I think that's 100% true. And I think that's why I've made it my mission to just sit here on Clubhouse all the time, or go on tons of radio shows and on podcasts, because I'm thinking if people knew about this, you'd have a competitive edge. It's as simple as that. I don't understand why it's seen as a badge of honor to pull all-nighters and show up really early in the morning at work, because you're cutting off your best creative time, which means, sure, you're going to be productive, you're going to do things, but at some point in most jobs that we have these days, you're going to also have to be able to process information and to come up with new ideas. Ideas are becoming more and more important in this day and age. And I'm talking small things, right? I'm going to give you an example of this, because research is my jam. I nerd out on it so much. I'm not a researcher, but I read everything that I can because it is amazing. And one of the very, very simple things to illustrate what I'm saying is research done in Germany by a guy named Wagner. I'm not making this up, Ulrich Wagner. And he thought, okay, if our brain is so smart, right? What if I give my students a very complicated math equation, but I hide a shortcut in it? And every time they do the equation, with different numbers, obviously, they have to work really hard to solve it because it's lots of things that you have to do. But every time, if you understand the shortcut, it's going to take you no time, like almost immediately what the answer is going to be. How long is it going to take them to figure it out? A long time. in every group of students that he did this research, there was a certain percentage who would find it, and those people were disqualified. But from the people who didn't find it, who just keep doing and doing the math, of course, you're going to get faster at it the longer you do it, but there's a cap at that. You still have to come up with all the numbers and do all the math, right? Now, here's what he did. He had these people practice with this math equation until they were kind of getting good at it, and then he let them sleep on it. But a control group, he let to do the equation in the morning, and he let them do something else during the day. Now, whether they slept on it or did something else during the day, 8 hours later, he let them do the same math equation again, seeing if they would now figure out the shortcut. Now, the people who'd been doing something else had time to think about it, but they didn't figure it out. But from the people who got to sleep on it, none of them had dreams about it. None of them were dreaming about math, or at least not that they told him. But they did the puzzle in the morning, and they were like, wait a minute. Like, half of them figured out the shortcut. That is so simple. But imagine you're running a business and you want your employees to figure out new ways to corner a market. You want your employees to figure out faster ways to work or cleverer ways to work. But you don't let them sleep. Wagner proved that even if it's a simple, silly math equation, just let people sleep on it. And if there's a shortcut, they have a chance of figuring it out. But if you don't, brain's just not gonna. Why? Because that quiet time, that time to explore all the information that you've had, that time to really play with it and see what else there is, what other angle can I look at this from, you need your sleep for that.
That's amazing, Nicolina, because first of all, I don't know any organizations or companies that encourage you to sleep more at night versus work. But also, because we didn't realize this or haven't realized this or didn't know this, didn't have the information, we certainly aren't stressing our sleep time to be able to function better, especially if we have something like a high stakes situation. I'm imagining somebody who is a chess player and they have to get up and be on top of their game. I would think if I was advising them, the last thing I would say is, oh, sleep a lot. But I guess that's exactly what they should do if they already know the game and know their opponent or anything that has to do with even competitive sport, I would think. This would really helpful for.
There's a guy in Virginia who runs a sleep lab who gets hired by the best athletes everywhere just to optimize their sleep because these people know. Here's the thing, Avi, I feel like this information is trickling down. Like, it's slowly, but it is. Most people now know that we process information in our sleep. That was discovered in the 1950s. So there's a time lapse, but it happens. So most people are like, okay, if you have new information and you really need to let it sink in, sleep on it, fantastic. But what most people don't know yet, but we're going to get there, is that's not all your brain does. Sure. You process that information, but you actually get to work with it. You get to evaluate it. You get to see how it can connect to other information that you have in your mind. This is not a human thing either. There's a guy at MIT. His name is Wilson, Matthew Wilson, and he studied rats. Studies are always, how can we make it as simple as humanly possible, and does it still apply? So what he did was very simple. He hooked the rats up with wire, that's actually a little bit sad, to a monitor so that whatever they were doing, whether they were chewing or walking or whatever, he could monitor their brain activity. And he let them walk through a maze, complicated mazes. Apparently, rats are good at mazes. So he saw if the rat would go left, right, stop, turn, go back. He could just see that from their brain activity. So then at some point, obviously, a rat's going to fall asleep. And he could see the rats starting to dream about their experience. Left, right, stop, go back. But then he saw them making up new mazes, like trying out new options. Like, would this work? Would that work? He saw their brains going wild maze-wise. And he could monitor all of this. So he thought, okay, first they process what's happened during the day. But then their brains go wild with What are the possibilities? Okay, I have this input. What can I do with it? And human brains seem to work the same way if you look at brain scans. But here's the thing, Avi, and this is why I think sleeping is so important. If you look at just an EEG scanner of a sleeping person, you're going to monitor like REM sleep, where we have most of our dreams and where most of this creative process is going on, and you have deep sleep. Now, this is what a lot of people also don't know. Most people know you have 90 minutes sleep cycles over and over again, where you have deep sleep first and then REM sleep. But here's the trick. In the first hours of sleep, you have a lot of deep sleep and an itty bitty bitty REM sleep, like maybe 5 or 10 minutes of the whole 90 minutes. But that shifts. So in the last hour of the night, you have almost no deep sleep and tons of REM sleep. So the bulk of your REM sleep, it's not equally divided. It's at the in the morning hours. In the last hour of your sleep, if you wake up without an alarm clock, you just let yourself sleep however long you want, then that last hour is almost all REM sleep. Now, what if you cut that off? You're not just cutting off an hour of REM sleep. You're cutting off almost half of your entire process. I put up a little graph on my resources page that Avi just put up. If you scroll down, you can see it. It doesn't matter who you monitor. You're always going to see first hours, lots of deep sleep, fantastic for processing information and for resting your body and for resting your mind. But then those last hours, if you want to wake up with a great idea, if you want to make sure that you've really thought it through, all of the information that you had, if you want to make sure that you're going to be like the best human you can be in the next day, do not cut off that last hour of REM sleep. But we do. We live in a society where we have to, where we are asked to set up alarms and be proud of it, and where we're asked to go to work or go to school sleepy and still function. And I think that's a little bit cruel.
You're giving us permission, Nicolina, to sleep more. And then if anybody says anything about it, we could just put all the research. Here's all the research findings for why this is a better use of my time than whatever you're asking me to do. I'm going to approach life this way from now on.
There's a poet who would have a little sign up who would say, genius at work when he was sleeping. He wasn't wrong.
Oh, that's so cool. I want a t-shirt like that. That's really cool. I love that.
We should make pajamas that say that.
Yes. Oh my God. But I do think if this information was out in the way that so many other insights are about so many other things, I think that our way of thinking about sleep, our relationship to sleep, and our relationship to people who sleep would be really different just societally, because I think this idea of sleeping is lazy, it feels very old. And integrating these insights that you're sharing would really reshape that relationship. So I'm just excited to be doing this as a part of that, because even though I still feel a little bit guilty on those mornings when I get up really late, I think by having these conversations that my relationship actually is starting to shift a little bit too.
I want to interrupt you because I want to give everyone permission. Like, how could you know this? You look at someone who's sleeping or just lying on the couch or sitting in the sun, and they're just sitting there doing nothing. How can you see that as productive? Unless you're like really good at meditation or really good at knowing your own inner process. I know that my grandma would always say, hey, honey, just sleep on it. You'll have the answer in the morning. But that's sort of like a grandma thing to say, right? It's not something that we take seriously as, okay, this is part of my design process now. Although I say design process, I noticed that artists and creatives whose literal job it is to keep coming up with new stuff, oh, they know this. I've never met one artist who's like never got an idea in a dream or never used sleep as a way of getting creative. So I think it's also more of that we've labeled that that's for certain people, but not for everyone. But I'm just hoping to change that.
You are, starting with me, and now whoever's in this clubhouse room or anybody else who's going to eventually hear us speak. So I'm just excited for it. I want to know more, about what's going on with our brain while we're sleeping and anything else that you think we really should know about what is going on with us while we're sleeping. I've heard you talk about so many amazing examples, so I would just love to share as much of that as you'd like.
Well, let me start with a preface, because people who hear me speak always ask me privately, but there's so many ways to approach dreams. How do you feel about other theories? In a second, I'm just going to give you a little overview of different ways people view dreams. But one of the things that I really want to state, just so you know where I stand as a person, right, is that I am very aware that today is not the end of science. It's not like, okay, now we know everything. There's nothing more to know. Bye-bye. I know that there's so much more, that every single time there's even a tiny little new scanner that we discover. I know it was only 20 years ago that someone said, hey, but wait a minute. If you put someone in an fMRI scanner, right, and you give them tasks, what does the brain do in between tasks? Should we give that like a name or something? And they named it default mode network, as in that's what the brain does by default, apparently. But that is when you sit in there and have absolutely nothing else to do, an fMRI scanner on the inside, pretty boring. And your brain's just, okay, I have some space and time to think about things. Go. And there's a whole field of study in what is that creative aspect of doing nothing. But that's only 20 years old, which is, for me, it's amazing that it happens, but it's also in science that's relatively new. Now, I promised you about where do I stand on this. What I'm going with this is every single time that I'm blown away by a clever way of looking at this or researching this, I'm also very aware of how much I know I don't know, how much is impossible to measure at this point in time. How many experiences people tell me that they have in dreams or when they're asleep, and they ask me, but how is that possible? I don't know. I don't have a measuring device on what it means when you dream of a loved one and then the next day they've died or something. I don't know. But I know that it happens so much that I'm a complete follower of a philosopher who once said, please be mindful not to reduce your worldview to just the things that we can measure at this point in history, because obviously it's more than that. So when I'm going to nerd out about all of these things, I am by no means implying that I think that's all there's out there. I'm thinking there's going to be more, but the things that are measurable right now are amazing as is, and you need to know about them. Honestly, don't know where to start, so I'm going to start with my fangirl crush, Deirdre Barrett, who made students sleep on a problem. Now, she's a psychology teacher at Harvard and Harvard Medical School. And she said, you know what? You guys have a week. It can be anything you want, but make sure that you care about it a little bit. Like it could be a work issue. It could be a studying issue. It could be a relationship issue. I don't care, but it has to be something that you at least feel a little bit passionate about, because dreams are so emotionally driven. She said, here's what you're going to do. You're going to write down the problem, put that by your bed so that you can read it over and it's the last thing you think about. And then in the morning, you're going to see if you had a dream about it. And guess what? In only a week, students who'd never done this before, half of them managed to actually dream about the issue that they set themselves out to dream about. So it's really steerable. Think about it. A week, that's nothing. And okay, these were Harvard psychology students, but that doesn't make them geniuses. All they had to do was put their mindful attention to, okay, I want to really see if I can have a dream about this issue. But they didn't stop there. They also said, I want to get an answer in my dream. Now, that was harder. But of those half of people who'd actually managed to have a dream within a week, that's 7 days, that's really short. Of those people, half of them had a dream that gave them insight to actually solve their problem. Baird didn't just take their word for it. She said, we're going to have an independent committee who can just see if they would see that this solves your problem as well. Because you can be like, hey, yeah, it worked fine. No, we want to judge if we think that's a solution to your problem coming from your dream. Yep, everybody agreed. So if you just take a week and dream of a problem, there's a 25% chance you get it. What if you take longer than a week? What if you make this a practice, which I do? Because I feel like for me as a person, it's not always easy in the day to really know how I feel about things. Sometimes I need to step back for a second. And sometimes I get stuck. And sometimes I don't know how to proceed and I don't know what to do. Especially then is the times when I want to sleep on things. What if you use this as part of your thinking time? Because you're so aware and so conscious when you're sleeping. But also, Bert was smart. What if you use it for things that are especially hard, which is connecting back to your emotions? How do I really feel about this? And that's where it comes to, how can you use this?
You know why I love this so much, Nicolina? It is because all of us are trying to get more deeply connected to our intuition. And speaking about science and not being able to prove things, the reason Albert Einstein is one of my favorite people that ever lived is that every time I look at anything that he said, all of his quotes are so aligned with what you're talking about in terms of, although he was a man of science, he was guided most frequently, if anything, by his intuition. And what you're saying is that sleeping allows us to connect with ourselves in the deepest way possible so that we are not thinking about everything rationally and making decisions from a more surface level or what we can measure or understand or explain, and that these decisions are coming from a deeper place inside of us and a connection to a deeper place inside of us and a knowing. And that to me is really magical. It's not something that we can do most of the time. So just the connection to our intuition when we have higher stakes decisions and need to be guided from truth in ourselves is so powerful. And then there's all the pieces about creativity and everything else. It's so powerful to be able to connect to ourselves in that way and actually do it with intention.
I so agree with you there. And I think our emotions are way more important than we give it credit for. Probably most people who know me know that I'm also a fan of the work of Antonio Damasio, who is really on that track of, hey, we can think we're being all rational for things. But he did this research with a person who was literally, by a brain injury, disconnected from their emotions. Like they had no connection with their amygdala. They were just shut off. So all the emotion centers in the brain just wouldn't function anymore. He tried to make that person gamble in a casino, learning how to play cards, learning how to play roulette. Now, especially with cards, I've done it. People tried to teach me blackjack. You have to learn the rules. There are certain rules that you know, okay, if these in combination of cards, not to bet because you're going to lose. And if you get this in this combination of cards, that is a good hand. This person was incapable of learning what a good hand and a bad hand was. Because you could explain the simple math, but they just didn't feel it. And even with something as rational as, okay, what is a good hand of cards? If your emotions ain't involved, it seems to be impossible to learn it. So I think there's a whole lot to explore when it comes to how impactful our emotions are in real life, every single aspect of our life, which is why I love that every night we have this hours and hours of chance to really check in with ourselves.
You know how much I love talking about emotions. It is literally my favorite topic on the planet. And I love that you mentioned Damasio, because those of us in the quote unquote rational world also benefit a lot from his study, because it is also relevant to purchase decisions. 95% of our decisions to buy things we think is rational, but it is actually emotional. And those of us who believe that we're doing things rationally, and this is something David and I discussed on another conversation where we talked about how The need to feel like we are doing things logically is coming from an emotion, and that emotion is fear. So when we
Isn't it though?
When you really actually think about it, the reason that we need to think we're making rational decisions, anybody who ever says to me, I'm a very logical person, I make rational decisions, it's coming from the deepest emotional place, that statement, because it's the fear of making the wrong decision and a lack of attunement to what might be going on inside of us. Because the more we are discovering about ourselves and the role that our emotions play in everything that we do, our existence, and the fact that they're literally running our life, they are the drivers for so many things, and then we understand how amazing it is to have this time where we can defy logic. And especially for those of us who are really rational or really are coming from that deep fear of making the wrong decision. So we are hanging on to our logic or our understanding of logic or operating that way. It's even more valuable because you don't have a choice while you're sleeping. Your emotions are going to fly. And so you won't be able to be logical. So you'll get to benefit from them whether you like it or not. And then you can explain them away in a different way, I guess, when you wake up. But at least for those of us who have this fear, it connects us to our emotions, especially the unpleasant ones, while we are sleeping, so we can process some of it if we're not a fan of doing that during the day and they don't surface for us in that way because we're not embracing whatever the unpleasant ones are. But I think this is so powerful for those of us who think we are logical.
I so agree. It's really funny what you said. But also, you said something really great about the discovering of our emotions and that adding an extra layer to ourselves. And I so agree. I'm now thinking about something that we actually all know, where there's such a difference between having an actual gut feeling about something or jumping to a conclusion about something. The second one is like really quick pathway of, oh, it must be this, but you haven't really felt it through. Or it's, I really feel in my heart that this is the right way to go. Then you have felt it through. Now, we all know which one of the two usually is right. And it's not the jumping to conclusions ones in my case. But a night's sleep on it is going to make the difference there. Like one of the things that we know for sure for people who haven't had enough sleep is that they keep jumping to conclusion and having backtrack. This one researcher let thousands of Dutch people fill out questionnaires online. And I asked very few questions, simple. Did you have a good night's sleep? How many hours do you usually get? And how many hours did you get today? So how many hours are you missing? Have you had coffee yet? And could you please do this little simple test here online where you just have to click yes or no to tons of questions? Now, the people who had a great night's sleep, didn't even need coffee, they did fantastic on this test. They were fast. They clicked the right answer. They didn't have to go back and correct themselves. They were really great, obviously. Now, the people who had a bad night's sleep and hadn't had their coffee yet and did the test, they were not so good. They were very slow. They needed a lot of time for those questions to get the right answer. So they were okay at the test, but they were really slow about it. The worst performers were the people who had a bad night's sleep but had coffee. Because they were just clicking, 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 and then they had to go back and correct it. So they were fast, but the end result, because they had to go back and review their work, oh, wait, no, that was wrong. Oh, wait, no, that was wrong. They were the slowest of them all. So as simple as if your job is clicking things on a computer, even then it's really important that you had a night's sleep. But what if your job is, I don't know, air traffic controller? Then I think this little research really matters because not all these decisions are just, okay, rational decisions. You really have to be involved with making a good decision.
It is one of the biggest challenges for some of us, making decisions. So I think getting any kind of help would be really good, especially if we know that it's within us. The answer is within us.
I'm going to go throw a little example at you.
Yeah.
This is the sweetest story that I heard from an 80-year-old lady when I was writing my book. She's Dutch. And she said, I have had the best marriage. Her husband was deceased, but she spoke of him with such love. She said, here's the thing. I almost missed it. Because in the 1950s, I was an exchange student with the Marshall Program right after the war. And I got to live in New York for a year and work in New York for a year. And it was fantastic. We were this whole group of Dutch people. And in the weekends, we would go see things and we'd go to museums. It was so good. And there were these two guys that would always keep asking me out. And the one was like really handsome. And the other one was also really sweet. And they were both asking for my attention. But at this one time, I wasn't feeling well. And there was some trouble back at home. And my family wouldn't respond to my letters. And I was not in a good place. And this really sweet guy asked me out. And I was going to cancel because I was like, I can't bring my best self to this date. There's too much going on and I can't tell him about it, obviously, because why would I bother other people? And that night I had a dream. And in a dream, I just heard my own voice say to myself, yeah, but you can absolutely trust him. And then I woke up and I was baffled. And I went on the date and I told him about my issues and he was so sweet about it. And I felt like I could trust him. And he was really, from that moment on, just so supportive. And he was there for me and like really genuinely as a friend. And I end up seeing him in this completely different way, not just, oh, a sweet guy, but this is a person I can be really myself with. And that was the guy I married. And that story touched my heart so much, Avi, because I thought that little sentence that she put in there, I almost missed it. Because I didn't see him that way. She hadn't noticed how trustworthy he was because it hadn't come up. And she wasn't the kind of person that would start testing that out. It's a simple thing. But it's why I like checking in with my feelings and my dreams.
That is a really good example, Nicolina, of the way that our emotions can really help us. They are messengers. A lot of the times, and there's complications with our emotions being messengers. And we've talked about that before, because there are things arising for us in terms of our emotions that don't have to do with what is happening in the current moment. So our emotions sometimes are steering us in a direction with something that's happening in the moment that has to do with the things that happened in the past. And in those cases, it's not our intuition, and it's really hard to know the difference. But when it is true, when we are aligned, it's like we inherently are going on a date with someone, for example. We're on the second date, and somehow they feel like home, but we can't understand why. But we're observing so much. There's a reason that our nervous system relaxes around this person, and we might not be able to explain it because maybe we don't have the words, or because it's not about thinking, but it's about a feeling of safety. It's about our senses understanding something that maybe our brain can't immediately. And then being able to take advantage of that while we're sleeping and help the guidance that we already have inside of us with our emotions guiding us to our decisions and who is safe and who our body and our soul already is approving of, because they make our nervous system relax for so many different reasons, is so good and so powerful. Like, I can't imagine having a more powerful tool to make decisions that inherently are right for us. If we could learn how to work with our dreams, it would give us a little bit of solace or just peace to know that we've connected to the deepest part of ourselves. And that's where the decision's coming from, even if it might not on the surface feel like the right decision logically.
Oh, I really like that. And actually, I do that in my daily life all the time. If I know it's an important decision, I definitely sleep on it. And in the morning, I pay attention to either a dream, or maybe how I'm feeling, or what I'm thinking. What is the first thing I'm thinking of in the morning? It's so helpful. And sometimes it gives me actually an answer, but usually it doesn't. But it gives me like a direction to think further, another angle to explore that I hadn't seen, so that I can gather more information, which for me is invaluable. I also really liked what you said about consciousness. And I kind of have to be honest, since I started looking into, like really seriously looking into what dreams are, my idea of what consciousness is has become much broader. Like I'm thinking we have body consciousness. We're very aware of the things that are going in. We have a nervous system. We have emotions. We have so many things. And I don't care if you call it higher self or deeper self. We have connection to the world around us. But I do know that it made me feel really good to make space for that and to get the information from that part as well, not just the rational consciousness, which I feel is a part of consciousness, but not the whole, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I've heard you talk about how basically cognitive consciousness isn't our full consciousness, which makes a lot of sense because when we're talking about our emotions or our various senses, knowing the truth of something, we're not thinking it. We just sometimes know it and the signals aren't necessarily coming from us thinking through things. So I think that's really helpful. And I am looking for the best definition of consciousness I can find. Nicolina, I don't know if you have one.
Yeah. No. It's like asking me, what is being? What is thinking? What is dreaming? These questions are so big. Oh, by the way, I promised to tell you a little bit about the theories of what is dreaming. Okay, here we go. And this is not an extensive list. There is more, but this is the main ones. One of the theories that you will probably see online still a lot, it's called the activation synthesis theory. That is, activation of the brain, for whatever reason, creates our minds to make up stories and make it a whole. That's the synthesis. This is a 1980s, 1990 highlight. People loved it in the 80s and 90s. It's created by Alan Hobson, and it's basically been quoted as, okay, so you have random brain firings and your brain just starts making up a story with these random neural firings. This has been debunked even by Hobson himself. And remember the 90s and the 80s? We didn't have an fMRI scanner. We didn't have the precision instruments that we have right now. So looking at what brain activity is wasn't as precise as it is now. Now we know that if you look at a face in the day, or if you see a face in your dream, it's going to be almost the same brain activity. The parts of the brain that are about facial recognition light up in both cases. So that means if it ain't random in the day, why would the same brain activity be random at night? And again, even Alan Hobson, who is not an idiot, knows this. But his theory is very hard to crush. This is where it's sometimes what is known in the scientific community and what trickles down from that is not always the same thing. There's a lag there. So I get a lot of people who say, yeah, but isn't it random firings? I was like, that's what people thought in the 80s. What else people thought about heart surgery in the 80s? You don't want to have those theories right now. That's a lot of years ago. That's my lifetime ago, almost. Another theory that I think is a really funny one as well is an evolutionary theory. By the way, none of these theories I'm thinking are necessarily wrong. I do think that you can have random firings at some point and that gets incorporated into whatever dream you're having at that moment. But I think that can happen in the day as well. The evolutionary theory of dreaming, also interesting way of looking at it. That theory sees dreams as a fantastic environment, sort of an artificial intelligence environment where you can basically practice anything you want to practice. How to wrangle tigers? Go dream about it. Want to practice how to deal with your stressful life? Have tons of dreams about it. And then after you've dreamt about it a lot of times, how to fight with your boss, you might feel empowered to do it in real life and have that conversation, not as a fighting conversation, but as a calmer conversation. This idea that dreams help us as an artificial intelligence, virtual reality environments for practicing behavior. Interesting theory. There's another theory, and this is specifically thrown in the world by neurologist Robert Stickgold, who's at Harvard, and Antonio Zadra, who is at the University in Toronto, Canada. They say, but what if the main function of dreaming, or one of the main functions, is exploring new options? Like you have all these brain connectivity. You have the neurotransmitters completely shift to optimal making new connections, not being logical with that at all. Make connections wherever you want. What if that actually has the purpose of exploring new options? You have a problem, you sleep on it, exploring new options, or you work through it in your dream, or you have an emotion and you work through it. By exploring how else you can see this, from what new angles you can see this, their theory is that if a person has nightmares and they just won't go away, maybe it's because that system got jammed or isn't strong enough or needs a little help. And if you do it, the natural idea of the brain exploring any type of new information as, okay, what do we need to do with this? How do we need help with this? How can we make use of this in our everyday life? And then you wake up with a great idea. I like that theory a lot. There's a lot of psychological theories about dreams, like how can dreams help you in psychotherapy? Makes sense because there's so much space for emotions. So obviously fantastic to do something with that in psychotherapy. I've never met a psychotherapist who says, if someone dreams about something, I'm going to tell them what it means. No one does that anymore. If someone does that, I would question their license. But it's more like, how can you help someone explore their emotions through dreams? One of the main theories there is the continuation hypothesis, which is basically, we're the same person, even if we're asleep. So our cares that we have, our concerns, our emotions are going to show up. And you see that, for example, with COVID, was pretty impactful in most people's lives, started to show up in stress dreams about, oh my gosh, do I have my mask? Oh my gosh, I'm overwhelmed. Now I have to work from home and take care of the kids. And all of these things that people who never dreamt of masks before and never had stress dreams about taking care of the kids while having to work, suddenly starting to have stress dreams. Not always literally though. It might not be the kids, it might be 500 dogs, but the feeling that is the same. So that theory says, don't take it too literally, but look at the feelings that you have and the narrative that you build around it. And also look at your own actions, because you're the same person, whether you're asleep or whether you're awake. Maybe your behavior in your dream can tell you something about your behavior in the day. Smart theory. Not against it at all.
Can I ask you a question about one of
absolutely.
The theories? The one about the nightmare, I just want to make sure that I'm understanding it correctly. Based on this theory, is it that when we are having a recurring nightmare, there's something that is stuck or we're stuck somewhere, and that if we can figure out how to work with the information that we're getting from our recurring nightmare. And I say this on the day where I was going back and forth and speaking with Leslie Ellis, who is a psychotherapist who is an expert on nightmares. And I was looking up some search terms for her. We were going back and forth for the blog that she's writing for me. And I was seeing that there was this surge in a search for dreaming of the same man, scary man every night. So when you were talking about the recurring nightmares, it just took me right there. And so does that mean that there's information in the nightmare and that we're stuck, and that if we could connect with the underlying emotion, that we can work through it? Did I understand that right?
Yeah, that theory says yes, that would be it. But there would be another theory that says no, but maybe that nightmare comes from an emotion that needs to have therapy in the day. That's another way of looking at it. A theory that I was almost at is a psychological therapy that's embodiment, that says, hey, what if everything that you dream is actually not that person or that emotion, but it stands for a part of yourself? Then it's like, is there something that is chasing you that you need to see about yourself? Which is a fun way of playing with dreams, but a different way of looking at it. And then the last thing that I wanted to address, there is so much different that I can't even go in there, spiritual theories about dreaming, who all have their own merits. I'm just giving you this really lengthy and incomplete list to say there's so many ways of approaching our mind in the day, and there's also so many ways of approaching a dream. Depends on what culture you come from, what viewpoint you have, and how you want to work with this. Some people are like, I don't care about all these psychological theories. I want to learn how to control my dreams. Okay, enter lucid dreaming, where you can learn how to control your dreams. It's a way of doing things. But other people are like, no, I don't care about controlling my dreams. I want to have more insights. Give me one of the other ways of looking at it. I am of the school that there is no one better than the other, that is more like for layered humans. And our minds in the day are so complex and do so many things at once. Like I can be thinking I have to buy butter, and at the same time I can have deep emotions about my husband, and at the same time I can think, oh, I should write this down because I'm having a thought that's super interesting. All of that happens at once. And then suddenly I have this moment of divine inspiration. I don't even know where it comes from. I think that layeredness and that complexity is even bigger in dreams. I just see no reason why it would be smaller, is all I'm saying.
When you're talking about having control in our dreams and lucid dreaming, I know that Robert Wagner keeps talking about how amazing people find it, including him, to travel to different galaxies we could never travel to otherwise. But the only thing that occurs to me as soon as I hear lucid dreaming is I don't want to have to keep control at night. Enough of that. During the day, I'm trying to not feel like I need to control things during the day. To actively want to control things at night feels like more work than I want to do.
Honestly, I'm with you on that, Avi. Here's one of the funnest things that I know about lucid dreaming, which makes me feel actually really good about what you just said, because I feel that too. You know how way an hour ago when we started talking about this, I said one of the very few parts of our brain that actually does take a back seat when we fall asleep is the part of the prefrontal cortex in the forefront of your head that's all about logic and reasoning and the feeling of control. Now, when a person gets lucid in a dream, it's, wait a minute, this is a dream. I'm in full control. That part kicks in. And for me, that's exhausting because that part of my brain needs a break. But lucid dreamers are like, no, I love it. I love it. Good on you. Good on you. But for me, I'm like, no. I'm trying to have less control in my daily life and explore myself more. I'm not trying to take more control in my dreams. But then again, having said that, people who swear by it, especially when they have nightmares and they want to be like, okay, instead of being chased by the angry man, turn around and be like, okay, what did you want to tell me? Bring it on. Because I'm aware that I'm dreaming and I know you can't really hurt me. It's a way of going.
Well, no, I think that's really cool though, because those are situations where the control is needed because the feeling out of control is unbearable in a lot of ways. And so it's cool that is possible. I think for the rest of us who are not suffering in that way, it just feels like a relief not to have to do it. So it's good that it's all possible. I'm wondering from all of these different theories, Nicolina, what are you feeling like is more true for you? I know there's so many ones that you laid out.
Yeah. You know what? I've been thinking about it and a lot, like for years. And I think that human need for needing the one true answer is a hindrance when it comes to dreams. Like, which theory is the right one? They can all be true. We're very complex beings. But also, you wake up in a dream, okay, what does it mean? Instead of exploring, what can I do with this? What are different ways of looking at it? How can I unpack it? I feel like, especially when it comes to something so intuitive and precious, but also fragile as our mind, especially our dreaming mind, we're doing ourselves a disservice to want to so fiercely categorize it and label it instead of enjoying it and exploring it and using it.
I love that. Amen, lady. Amen. I know that I would love to be able to get to the part where I know it has to do with how we can use this information that you've shared in our own everyday lives, but I can't leave without the DuPont example, Nicolina.
Oh, that is a good example of how we can use that in our everyday life. And I got this example not from the guy himself, but from Deirdre Barrett, who I trust, who researched it. And she made a whole book about examples of people using their dreams in their everyday life, especially for getting new ideas. It's called the Committee of Sleep, because duh, like a committee who works on your dreams and sleep. And I've put it in with my resources because it's very compact, but it's really fun. One of the examples that she gave was an engineer who worked at DuPont in the time of the Gulf War. Now, I didn't know this, but DuPont makes Kevlar, the material for bulletproof vests. So they were asked to amp up their production, like big time, as much as you can. Make those machines run at top capacity. I don't care what it takes, but please give our soldiers bulletproof vests. This was in America. Okay. So they did it. Those machines were running faster than they'd ever run before. And another thing I didn't know is to make the fabric Kevlar, you need a lot of water. So I have no idea what these machines look like, but I do know there's tons of large rubber hoses that at this time, at huge speed, water is being pushed through to make this fabric. Okay. Machines kept breaking down and no one knew why. And every moment that they were not working was another 100,000 lost. And every day that they were not working was millions lost. And also, no Kevlar produced, no bulletproof vest. This was a high-stress situation. So the engineers kept shutting the machine down, taking it apart, but they couldn't find the problem. And after a long day of working on this problem, this one engineer went to sleep. And he wasn't like really one of the dreamiest guys. Was a mechanical engineer at DuPont. I don't know the guy, but he woke up, he said, in the middle of the night, and he had this dream where he saw himself inside of the machine, water everywhere, hoses everywhere, was not unlike reality, and metal springs, like, you know, the one you put in beds or in those rolled up springs that you have in a ballpoint pen if you take it apart, or in a bed, metal springs. And that's all. And he woke up and he had this like intense feeling of, that is the truth of everything. So he wrote down real quick to not forget it, water, hoses, springs. He was like, that's all I need to remember it in the morning. So in the morning, he was like, wait a minute, water, hoses, springs, what? But quickly it came back to him and he thought, that's it. What happens if you have a rubber hose and you push water through it like really fast at super high speed? It starts to suck vacuum, like you would have a straw, like a plastic straw that you would drink a drink through, but you do it with really a whole lot of pressure. It sucks vacuum on itself. But the minute you stop sucking, or the minute you stop pushing water through, it just becomes perfect again. Like it snaps back to its original form. So when they had these machines at high capacity, pushing water through it way faster than the things were designed for. And when the hoses would close, they wouldn't see it. It'd be inside the machine. But the minute they shut it down, these hoses would have the original form. You open up the machine, everything's fine, and you don't know what happened. And he thought, if I put metal springs inside of those hoses, the rubber keeps its shape no matter how much water I push through it. This is brilliant. I'm going to do it. He went to his work. He said, this is what we need to do. He was smart enough to not mention a dream because people don't like these things. And everybody said, that's ridiculous. That will never work. Don't be stupid. That can't be the problem. So another workday later, when they were in the, okay, let's try everything mode, he was like, remember those springs? I want to do it. So he did it. And it worked because that was the problem. That was a way of himself using all the information he had gathered in his entire life, or maybe seen out of the corner of his eye, or maybe divine inspiration, I don't care. Put it together in a really tightly wrapped metaphor of water, springs, and hoses. And that's all he needed to know. This is so applicable. And I read this story and I thought, this is amazing. And then I read the next sentence where the engineer was quoted and he said, if I hadn't done a workshop on a dream, like a dream seminar on how to use dreams for inspiration, I would never have thought to write that down. And I felt very empowered about my work all of a sudden.
What year was this where there was a dream workshop happening and an engineer attending? I want to know.
We got to ask Barrett, okay, were you perchance the one doing this workshop? Honestly, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. He's been doing this for decades. And if no one starts talking about it, what other company is going to be like, hey, you know where good ideas sometimes come from? Let's do some workshops about it. Or how we can keep really in touch with, is our team still functioning or is everybody really secretly hating each other? Let's pay attention to people's dreams. No one does that. People are ashamed to talk about it or shy or they don't wanna or they feel like it's flaky to even ask or to even say something. And then, of course, there's Freud, who put in the whole idea of, oh, you dreamed that you had sex with a coworker. Uh-huh. That means you secretly want him, huh? No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. But if you start taking things that literally or start being of the whole, oh, it has to mean something outside of myself, no one's going to want that for their own dreams. So everybody's showing up. I don't know where to begin with this, Avi.
I think you are already beginning with this. It's so weird because this example is such a good example as it relates to how companies and corporations can really use this tool of our own dreams to innovate, right? Like, what is innovation if it's not connecting the dots on or making new connections on things that we already know about? Because nothing just comes from the ether. It's coming from us making new connections of what we already know. And if you think about it that way, everyone's trying to do this. And here's a way that has already been proven scientifically and with these examples over the years, but culture takes time to shift. And so that's why culture shifting conversations are my favorite, because there are insights that we already have. And then for whatever reason, they are not getting distributed. And also having somebody credible like you, Nicolina, who is obsessed with the science of things, talking about dreams, I think, is also really helpful. There's you and there's Deidre Barrett and there's a couple of other people who understand the science and are speaking about it. So maybe it's just about finding ways or platforms for you guys to be able to speak louder to the masses, because this message is really important for so many of us, and it could help solve things that we are struggling with. That's why I'm so excited to always have these conversations with you, because the more we talk about it, the more I hope that it travels. And I think the traveling part and also busting the myths and also destigmatizing this idea of the transformative and powerful part of our dream life is going to be our path to being able to use it better for our lives. So I'm just excited.
Yeah. And I do think that in a time where a lot of people don't know about this, it can give you a superpower. It does for me.
Oh, yes, totally. Like a competitive advantage, which is why I think it's literally about corporate America having a deeper understanding of it, because I think then they'll be in competition to get the best dream expert to help them. So
we'll it's really funny though, because in the field of psychology, if I tell people what I do, people are like, oh, so you're a psychologist, then you're going to fix my life now. I'm like, oh, wait, no, there's more to dreams than just psychology, which is amazing, by the way, not saying anything about it. But it's like thinking can only be this one thing if you're asleep. And I'm saying I really focused on making a little bit of an opening where it doesn't have to be this one thing or this other thing, but it really enrich your life and give yourself like a deeper layer of understanding and inspiration, if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense to me. A lot of sense to me. And I'm wondering if there's anything else, Nicolina, that you want to mention before we start talking about how we can use all of this amazing information and all the insights that you've shared for ourselves in our everyday lives and how to apply it to our lives.
I have so many more examples, but I like getting into the whole try this at home part, because here's the thing. It's so simple in a way. For me, when I work with clients, there's three steps that I ask them to do. But before that, there's the one really big one. And that one is implicit, and I never say it as a step. But it's all about the permission. Do I give myself permission to take myself seriously, even if it happened when I was, quote unquote, unconscious, which I think is actually super conscious, when I was asleep? So this idea that even though it didn't happen when I was in control and awake, can I still take this experience seriously as an experience? And can I take it and start to explore it instead of having to push it away or having to label it? Usually when I work with someone new, that is the underlying vibe of our very first conversation. And it's the underlying vibe of our conversation today. Now that you have that permission to take it seriously, then comes the first step. What do I want to do with it? Like, some people are really happy with just letting happen what happens. Other people really want to explore. Some people want to focus on things. One of the first steps, if you think, okay, I want to dive into my dreams a little bit. Everyone says this online. Everyone says this who works with dreams. I completely am all for it. Help yourself to capture it first. And that is very simple. Write things down or talk to your phone. I don't care. What you're doing is more than just making a little memory book, which is fantastic. You're also training yourself, like as a practice, to translate your unconscious thinking process in the night to your conscious thinking process in the day. You're using words to solidify things. At night, we're so all about the emotions and the feeling and the visualization and the experience that sometimes you need a little bridge to get all of that to, okay, how can I make this logical? What can I do with it? And a lot of people just throw things away because it seems too illogical. Words help. Just telling my dream to my husband helps me put it in words because he listens. Because he knows that I'm going to smack him if he doesn't. But he also wants to. So that's why I married him. Just putting it into words. Sometimes you hear yourself talk and be like, wait a minute. I already know what that's about. Just writing it down and reading it back. But wait a minute. I keep using the word evasion all the time. Am I trying to tell myself something? It really solidifies it in a way that your logic can start running with it and can start unpacking more. That was one of the simple tricks, but it helps. And the other really simple trick that I like personally is be like the guy from DuPont or like Barrett's students and formulate a problem before I fall asleep. If I'm stuck on something or I don't know how to proceed or I need inspiration or I'm feeling like I'm missing something, but I'm not really sure what it is, that is when I consciously phrase a question to myself before I fall asleep and consciously kickstart myself and say, okay, this is what I would like to work on for this night, please. Thank you very much. And in the morning, I write down whatever is in my heart, whatever is in my mind, whatever is in my feelings, whatever is in my dreams first, before I even get out of bed, again, to capture it. The third thing that I always tell people, this is going to be so helpful. It was helpful for me anyway. So you do this whole thought incubation before you fall asleep. You do capture the results. The third part is the fun part where I get to read back all of my thoughts that I write down, or I hear back from my husband all of the things that I rambled at him, or I just have some point of overview where all of the explorations that I made, and maybe I had other thoughts and I wrote them down, and maybe I had ideas from ideas and I wrote them down. The third part is the fun part where you get to overview it and you get to be extremely logical and be like, okay, now I'm in control. Does this make sense? And sometimes it doesn't, and that's fine. And sometimes it just makes sense much later, and that's fine. And sometimes it makes sense in a deep emotional level and has nothing to do with ideas, but with, oh my gosh, I dreamt of my dad who's deceased. My dad is deceased. And I sometimes dream of him. And it just touches my heart and it doesn't need anything else. But sometimes there's an idea in there that I want to explore further in my waking life. That is where, for me, the fun starts. Do you think that's helpful for people, Avi?
Oh my gosh, of course it's helpful for people. And it's good to know that
the steps that you're suggesting don't seem overwhelming. It's manageable. We can do it.
That's what I like about it.
Yeah, it's a great start. It doesn't have to be something that has to work every other time, but it can be a way of working with yourself or with your own mind. That can be fun. It is fun for me.
And I also think the reason it's a practice is because when we haven't done something before, and this could also relate to even emotional self-awareness, when we haven't gone through a process before or are not familiar with the way it feels for us to do it, it takes a while for our entire system to even get acclimated to it. And I think that the same way as it works with emotions, it becomes integrated as just something we do versus something that we really try to do. I feel like that's how it is with you now and with your dreams. Not that you're not intentional with wanting a particular answer, or sometimes you'll say to me when we're talking about something, you'll say, oh, I'm going to sleep on it, when we're thinking about a choice that we want to make or a direction that we want to go in together. It just becomes part of us, where we know when these emotions are arising and we know that we want to connect to them, even if it is in our sleep and they're coming for us. Are we open to what they have to say and willingly want to or desire these insights? I feel like the reason it's a practice is because once we integrate it into our lives, it feels more free-flowing and less, not less intentional, but less like we have to focus to do it. That's what I'm discovering with me and dreams, is that first, I had to be open to the idea of it. Destigmatizing dreams and talking about the science of it really helps, because whatever we have in our heads about what dreams are needs to be reshaped. So it takes time for that to happen. It takes a while to even get used to the idea of something. And then you start doing it. And then it's still challenging because you're not getting the results that you wanted. It's almost like eating well or exercising too, that becomes a practice. And then your body wants it. It just becomes something you do every day because you get up and you put on your running shoes and you go, or you eat the way you eat, or you meditate, or you feel your emotions without like intentionally trying to feel your emotions. So I feel like it's part of this journey, and the practice just allows us to seamlessly live it instead of feel like we have to try to do it. And I think that's where I am in this journey. As I told you the other night, I was telling Nicolina that I feel like I slept and I had not just one movie, it just felt like two movies of the same franchise were happening. And there was so much plot. And I remember my feelings, and there were characters in it that were good and bad. And I could understand their mission, and I could understand me feeling trapped and trying to get out of it. But it felt like there were so many beats to it. And I'm not sure I was convinced that I could have dreams when Nicolene and I started, because we have to work past that belief and allow ourselves, just like you said, or permit ourselves to feel things a different way, see things a different way, understand things a different way. And then the gates will open for all of us and for the insights that we can get.
I love that, Avi. And it's true that I do that. I wake up as a habit, but I don't jump out of bed. Of course, I love staying in bed a second longer. So it's an excuse as much as a practice. But then I just think about, is there any memory? Is there anything going on? And sometimes that's not fun. It is fun for me because I know the profit. But sometimes I have a really intense dream, or a bad dream, or like an emotion that I don't want to explore because I was trying to ignore it in the day as hard as I could. But then it sneaks up on me at night. It can get confrontational. When I say it's fun, I don't mean I'm always laughing. I love getting to know myself this way, but it is not for the faint of heart. And especially when people are really working through things or have nightmares, it can get intense. I don't want to minimize that, is what I'm saying, by saying the word fun. I just think it's super valuable in my life.
But Nicolina, you just mentioned something else, as you mentioned that you didn't want to
just say that it was fun. And here's the thing, is that whatever is happening in our dreams, whatever emotions are running free, they are with us all of the time, right? They are living with us. They are running us. They are running us, these emotions that might be frightening in our nightmares, because when we're awake, we are just trying not to face them. And we just don't happen to have that choice. So if we know that, if we know that whatever the scary thing is that's happening to us at night is also with us during the day and making decisions for us and our family and our career and our life and our relationships and everything else, then maybe our dreams are the place where we can tolerate them a little bit more. Or us, at least we don't have a choice. Like, they're coming.
That's what I was actually thinking. Yeah. Is it tolerating, or is it we can't reason them away anymore, which is a superpower, not being able to reason things away? Fantastic. But at the same time, is it a choice?
No, maybe it is not a choice, but it's just presenting us with a different way of being able to look at them and process them. Or that distance that we always think is so important with something that's so challenging to look at. So no matter how you look at it, it feels like a gift. And it feels like another part of our conscious life that we didn't know was part of our conscious life that we can pay attention to and get insights from that can help us shape our lives in a way that feels more truly aligned with what we really want and really need. This is so good because there were so many conversations David and I had about our true needs and how most of us don't have a good relationship with our needs. And not only not a good relationship, but not an awareness of needs. So another place that they can come up when we don't want to look at our needs or maybe even acknowledge needs because we have a difficult relationship with them is in our dreams, because we don't have a choice. And the unmet need will make itself really clear. And here's another time when we're challenging something we should pay attention to, but we dare don't do that during the day, and how helpful it could be to have this other part of our life where we can look at the unmet needs that we have and figure out how we can stabilize again. It's just cool. It's just freaking cool, Nicolina.
I think you're absolutely right about that. I'm thinking now, it goes over and over in my mind of all the examples of people who came to me with a dream that was pretty, like, to them, it's like, oh, it was just a dream. So yeah, there is that distance. But then when we unpacked it, it really was about exactly what you're saying, an unmet need or something that they really needed to work on in the day, except it was packed in a metaphor that they didn't understand. So I think the benefit of learning to not take it literally or look up what someone else thinks about your own metaphors, there's really power there. We might not notice it, but I researched this the other day. There's one research going around that says we use a metaphor like every 20 sentences. Like all the time. We just don't notice. We don't see it as metaphors, but we think in metaphors constantly. We say, I'm flooded at work. There's no water involved in your work unless you're a plumber. You don't mean literal water, but that's just a way of expressing. I'm completely stuck in traffic. Actually, you can move around. It's just that you can't move your car when you want to go. I bet everybody listening can think of 5 examples of metaphors that we use all the time without even thinking about it. Now, if you dream that suddenly you're at work and there's water everywhere and you're flooding, don't go online, look up what does it mean when you dream when you're flooded, or what does it mean when you dream there's water at work or whatever. Just think about what you're saying to yourself. But this idea that metaphor is something that we play with in our minds all the day, so it's not weird that it also shows up in our dreaming. although some dreams are pretty literal and they don't all have to be metaphors, but the fact that shows up is one of the things that I tell people a lot of the times of like, think about it. It's not that weird. It's not that dreams are this weird metaphorical thing, whereas, of course, waking humans would never use a metaphor. No, this is you being you, except for more visual and less wordy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I never noticed that, Nicolina. I guess we don't notice it when we say, I'm so flooded. That's not an actual word that describes how we feel, but that it's a metaphor for how we feel. And I guess I'll be paying better attention to that. And that's such a practical tip that you just gave about checking in with the words that we're using, especially because now it's become so second nature to us that we forgot that there are metaphors, to have a better sense of what they really mean, because a lot of times we are saying what we really mean and just don't even realize it because we're using these metaphors, but we're not clued into it. So I think it's so practical in a way. So thank you for that. Super helpful.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I was thinking when you said that, sometimes I say to clients, imagine that you have to think, but you can't use words. Then what would you do? You can use feelings, you can use emotions, you can use situations, you can use scenarios, you can use analogies. Sure, as long as they're visual. Then you get a whole different way of thinking. And I think that's what Barrett meant a little bit when she said, we are thinking when we're asleep. We are thinking in our sleep. It's just in such a different biochemical state than we're using our brain in the day that we don't always classify it as such. That was a mind shift that made so much sense to me.
That makes a lot of sense to me too. That is amazing. This has been so good, Nicolina. You're always A plus. You're just beyond my imagination. Just the passion with which you talk about dreams, and I can feel the truth of it in you. Like, I know how excited you get when you find even a research paper. You guys, I get these messages from Nicolina that she found a new research paper, and it just comes with such enthusiasm that it's infectious. It's so cool that you love this stuff, because I love talking to you about it. And because every time we have these conversations, even though you and I have done this for a while, I learn something new. I find a different perspective from one of the examples. I think of a couple of things that I hadn't thought of before. And that's why it just feels so rewarding for me to talk to you. And I'm so excited, Nicolina, to be able to share the gift that you are with the world. Because everyone should know about you. Everyone should know all the insights that you share and benefit from them. And so thank you. Thank you for hosting this conversation with me.
Avi, you're going to make me blush. But thank you so much for asking these super insightful questions. It's really a joy talking about these things, because any question you ask and the perspective that you have about emotions challenges my brain to think further about it and to explore more. This is why I get so excited to share the research with you. And whether I agree with the research or I don't, sometimes I don't agree with their research. And I'm like, how could they research that? But it's fun. It's fun to think about it. It gives a little power. And I'm trying to hand that power off to anyone who's listening. Hey, this is your mind and it's awesome. And I want to tell you how to optimize it, how to use it, how to get access so you don't have to ask other people, but you can just be the master of your own brain, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that empowerment of being able to do that is so cool as well. It's just badass to be able to have access to that stuff on our own and find ways or learn ways to be able to relate to them in a way to get the insights that we wouldn't otherwise have. I think that is super powerful, super liberating, super empowering. So thank you for sharing these approaches with us, because we wouldn't know about them otherwise. And thank you for being here.
Oh gosh, yeah, this is us. This is us. Yeah. Avi, thank you so much for having me. It's always fun to talk about these things.
It was so good. It was really comprehensive and really great. So I think it really helped paint the bigger picture of why it's so important to pay attention to ourselves, and our dreams just happen to be a part of our consciousness that we can engage with in a different way that could really change our lives. So thank you so much for being here, Nicolina, and thank you, everybody. Have a beautiful morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you are in the world.
And I hope to see you all very soon.